Are you a Catholic woman who loves your faith, but finds certain aspects of living it out challenging and confusing? Are you a Catholic wife striving for a healthy, holy marriage and sex life, but don't know where to turn for straightforward, faithful, nitty-gritty answers to some of your deep and delicate questions? Are you a Catholic mom who's tired of the compare and despair game we all fall victim to on social media, and are just in need of some solidarity as you discover your own unique motherhood? Are you tired of the sunshine and rainbows pitch? Want to lean into the both and of the mess that happens when the truths of our faith get lived in a fallen world? Well, if that's where you find yourself, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Emily Frazee, your host of the Total Wine Podcast. I'm here to dig deep and tackle topics that we are all curious about, but maybe too afraid to ask. I'll answer it all with honesty and humor, because living the faithful life can make you either laugh or cry, and well, laughing burns more calories. Welcome to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Total Wine Podcast. I'm so excited for you to listen to today's episode. I am joined by one of my good friends, Dr. Sarah Bartel, and we're just talking about sex today, as one does, and as more Catholic women should. No, this conversation was so much fun, and Dr. Sarah dropped so many bombs on me. Good bombs. Very good bombs. Bombs that I am so excited for you to hear. Bombs that I wish I had in my arsenal this whole time, because they've been there for a long time. I just didn't know they were there. Such a good conversation. But one of the reasons, the main reason why I had Dr. Sarah on was to talk about her program called My Delight. Now, My Delight is a three-month-long course, a sex course, for Catholic engaged and married women in their 20s and 30s. And if you are older than in your 20s and 30s, just somebody with an open mindset. This is a three-month-long coaching course where you can really do a deep dive into your understanding of sex and sexuality through a Catholic lens. I can't stress enough how much this is needed. I mean, as you all know, like, I talk about sex a lot, but we need more. And this is an area where we really need some intensive dedication and intensive time spent helping women to really troubleshoot the issues in their marriage and in their sex life. And that's what Dr. Sarah's doing. And it's awesome. She has run this course a few times already. I've had the pleasure of joining her course as a guest expert during one of her coaching calls, which she does weekly. And we talk about all kinds of stuff. We talk about vibrators. We talk about mismatched libidos. We talk about the orgasm gap. We talk about, like, you know, the necessity of pleasure, like all these things that we need to have talked about, but which are not talked about in Catholic spheres, particularly not conversations hosted by women. Now, the thing that I love the most about Dr. Sarah, well, not love the most, but she's willing to have these conversations, and she has the formation to back up what she's sharing. Everything is through a faithful Catholic lens. You don't have to go through this course and filter out, like, okay, well, I'm doing a Christian course, but I'm Catholic, so they're telling me to do sex acts that are not licit under Catholic theological teaching. You don't have to worry about any of that. It's just you come in and you're going to get faithful help, real practical help. Dr. Sarah just has this beautiful personality, this beautiful spirit that is always looking for the joy and always looking for hope and optimism, but not in a way that is dismissive or just kind of recklessly happy-go-lucky. She's very practical, very practical. Like, let's look at the positive. Let's look at what is beautiful and what is good, and let's amplify that. But also, let's take some time and talk about how this is also difficult, where we are struggling, and let's not whitewash or sugarcoat that. Let's deal with that. And I'd like to just share her bio, because, you know, I'm telling you that she has an understanding of Catholic moral theology, but I'm going to let her bio do the talking there. So Dr. Sarah Bartel is a moral theologian with a passion for helping Catholic marriages thrive. She is the creator of My Delight, a course to help Catholic married women who have great sex with their husbands. Heck yes. And she and her husband Nathan are the creators of the Little Way of Marriage workshop and the Abundant Catholic Marriage course. She has served as a diocesan marriage and family consultant, a retreat and pilgrimage leader, and an award-winning marriage and family life columnist for her Archdiocesan magazine. She's the co-editor of A Catechism of Marriage and Family Life for CUA Press, and she earned her PhD in moral theology from the Catholic University of America. She's been married for 23 years to Nathan and has 5 children ages 4 to 19. Some of her favorite things are book club, British costume drama, film adaptations. This is where she and I just, yes, love that. Adoration, the rosary, and hiking with her family in her beautiful native Washington state. Yeah, so as I just said, faithful, Catholic, practical. She has the experience in her own marriage. She has the formation, the understanding, and the backing. So if you're in a position where you're thinking like, hey, I really need some help in my sex life. There are just some ideologies, you know, you've been listening to my podcast and there's just some things that may be hard to apply. I cannot recommend this course highly enough. Enrollment is coming up very soon, just right around the corner. You can start registering for this course on September 11th, Monday, September 11th, and enrollment closes on Thursday, September 14th. And this is, of course, the year 2023. So if you're listening to this after this time span, unfortunately, the window for this has closed. But Dr. Sarah opens up her course twice a year so far. I don't know if she'll have plans to change that, but as of right now, she has a spring course and a fall course. So the fall is opening up. You can find the link to that in my show notes if you'd like to sign up for this during that window. But I'm going to let you listen to Dr. Sarah. I wanted to have her come on because if I'm going to promote her course, I want you to have a chance to get to know her. And that way you can actually understand, what you'll be getting in her course. You'll get just a little taste. And at the end of our conversation, I will come back and I will share some more details about, the course itself, how much it costs, kind of what the time commitments are, and so on and so forth. But first, I want you to just enjoy two Catholic women talking about sex. Well, hi, Sarah. It's so great to have you on the Total Wine podcast today. Thanks for joining me.
I'm delighted to be here with you, Emily. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. You and I, you know, we've talked and collaborated on you know, several different projects, and it's always so great to talk to you about sex. I just love talking with you about sex. I know, like we should, like this is, I love having your expertise and your insight that I can kind of like fall back on, because I know like for me, with talking about sex, sometimes I can feel like a little nervous, like, oh, wait, did I get it right? Because then somebody will pull out like, oh, well, St. Alphonsus said this. And then, you know, somebody else said this. And it's always nice to have you to come back to and be like, okay, what's going on? Am I off my rocker? Like what's happening, to have just like that check? Because you're so like grounded and well-educated in moral theology, you have a PhD, yeah. So I just love having, being in this space with you and having your expertise to help me and, bolster me too. So I'm so excited to bring you
same here. I so appreciate, because you have so much practical experience and advice and are completely faithful and, you know, thinking with the church and a voice of women speaking out in really about the mutuality that is at the heart of our church teaching about sexuality. So I think that gets lost a lot of times. And I'm so thankful for you because it's, you know, it takes a ton of energy to put your voice out there in public spaces and keep doing this. So good for you.
It does. And I've definitely had to take breaks at times because it does wear on you. I've noticed like when you enter in the space and talk about this, like It gets heavy very quickly. Yeah, so having to take breaks, but I wanted to introduce my audience to you and to introduce them or to have you begin by talking about, like, let's talk about some of the church teaching stuff about sex. Let's talk about the things that maybe people don't fully understand. Like, you're already talking about mutuality. This is a huge linchpin of having a healthy sex life in marriage. And a lot of people just, they think that it's one-sided. We hear those things like, men need sex and they need it every 3 days. And of course, I'm like harping on this a lot in on my platforms and in this podcast, but I'd love to hear from you just kind of your take on that again, which I've already shared this, but you have a PhD in moral theology and Christian ethics, so you understand this stuff on a really deep level.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of faithful Catholics understand that the unitive and procreative aspects of sexuality are meant to, they're intrinsically integrated, right? That using contraception is immoral because it blocks the procreative aspect, but by so doing, it also unwittingly block, it's not a full union because this is supposed to be a total mutual gift of self. You're totally sharing yourself with your husband. He's totally sharing himself with you, including your, potential to procreate. But the mutuality, yes. So it's supposed to be a gift for the both of you, not just wives. You gotta, serve your husband in this way, and it's all on you to make sure to meet his, quote, air quotes, needs. This is really meant to be a mutual loving relationship that you build together. And it's in there, right there in the church documents, even in Humanae Vitae. It talks about the respect and regard a husband owes his wife. In Humanae Vitae, Pope Paul VI, Saint Pope Paul VI, talks about the dangers that would arise were contraception to become widely, accepted as they are now. And one of them is that a man would lose respect for his wife and consider her to be basically always sexually available to him. He wouldn't see her as someone to be surrounded with care and respect, but rather as an object. The very same thing happens or can happen if we have this attitude that the wife's part of the sexual relationship with her husband is just to be around for whenever he wants it. And that is so far from church teaching.
Yeah, no, it's I think that that kind of throws people for a loop because I know kind of I'm starting to become a lot more familiar with Sheila Gregoire's work, and of course she's speaking to the evangelical community, but I'm seeing so much overlap with purity culture in Catholic culture, and I think because America does have like very deep Protestant puritanical roots. Like, I think that, this is kind of embedded in the way that Catholics understand sexuality as well. Like, I don't think that this is like a disparate thing. So I think that we have a lot to learn as Catholics from her work of pointing these things out. And it's interesting. I've talked to couples who have used contraception and have switched over to NFP and or have had vasectomies or something. And one of the things that has been noted by the wives is like they don't really have a good reason to say no ever. And I'm like, oh, wow. And like, and the effect that that has on their psyche, like it basically takes consent off the table. Like, why are you saying no? And I read the book by Christine Emba. Now, this is like obviously not Catholic, but Rethinking Sex, which she's taking a secular view of consent culture and how, as long as we say yes, like anything goes. Like, this is the floor of having a healthy sexual relationship. Or no, I'm sorry, it's the ceiling of having a healthy sexual relationship. So it's just really interesting, like this idea that sex is mutual self-gift. When I talk about this, people are like, wait, it's not about like just making babies. It's not about just letting my husband ejaculate, which is like, why do you need a person if that's all it's about? It's like when you understand that sex is, it has this mystery, that the example that I like to use is like, if it's not about this mutuality, if it's not this deeper mystery, why the heck is the Song of Solomon in scripture?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It doesn't make any, like, how is this an imaging of the love of God for us? How can we have a book filled, like dripping with sexual euphemisms as like an allegory of God's love for us if sex is not this mutual act that we participate in?
Absolutely. Right. And then we see the spiritual aspect as well. And, you know, it's really can be powerful for building spiritual intimacy if there's a lot of interpersonal care. And okay, so I'm going to bring in some, I'm going to bring, find the quote I was looking for in Humanae Vitae. And then I'm going to share with you something I just got in an email from my moral theology mentor at the Catholic University of America, Dr. John Grabowski, who's an expert in theology of the body and in moral, you know, the in sexual ethics and whatnot. But you're going to love this, Emily.
I love it. I'm so excited.
But okay, here's the quote from Humanae Vitae about a man having reverence for his wife. So this is from Humanae Vitae, paragraph 17. So this is what I had in my mind when we were talking just a few minutes ago, and I was looking around for it, and here it is. So let's see, St. Pope Paul VI writes in paragraph 16, another effect of, you know, widespread acceptance of contraception that gives cause for alarm is that a man who grows accustomed to the use of contraceptive methods may forget the reverence due to a woman and, disregarding her physical and emotional equilibrium, reduce her to being a mere instrument for the satisfaction of his own desires, no longer considering her as his partner whom he should surround with care and affection. Emily, I come back to this quote so often when I am working with wives and, you know, others who have questions about, like, well, can I say no if I just, you know, if I'm like just really not interested and, or I'm tired or exhausted I'm kind of like, you know, and yeah, because
your sleep is a need.
Right. Your emotional equilibrium are important. Yeah. And you should be surrounded with care and affection. And what, like, we know, Emily, right? Like, physically, when we are exhausted, what takes a hit? Our libido, because it's, you know, it falls under our parasympathetic nervous system, right? And so when we're in fight or flight or exhaustion or drained, that's not what we're operating under. We need to have rest and care in order to experience that. So that's a lot, of what I do in the My Delight course is a lot of women come to the course because they think they're low libido. And so we talk about this. I'm like, maybe you're just low sleep. or low play. Like, do you have play in your life and fun? And if you're low on those things, it's going to be hard to tap into, you know, enjoyment as sex is enjoyment.
The thing in that quote from Humanae Vitae that I love, that word reverence.
Yes.
You know, that's a word that we're not really familiar with anymore, but what an important word to use, and what a profound word to use in this context, that a man loses his reverence for his wife. Like women who have low libido, it's mind-boggling to me that the spouse with the low libido, it's incumbent upon them to just put out. Like, that's very much the messaging. Mm-hmm. And it's reversed. It's like, no, the spouse with the higher libido should be putting themselves at the service of the spouse with the lower libido. And what do you need? Like, what you're talking about, play, like, actually, this just happened recently. I was just, you know, there was a string of stressful days, and there was some art projects that I had been wanting to do. And I finally was like, I'm going to do it. And I just let go. And I just let myself, I was like, you know what? I haven't painted in so long, and what's going to come out is probably going to be horrible, but I'm going to do it. And oh my gosh, it felt so good. It felt so good. So I think play, whenever we think play as an adult, it's like, what are you talking about? It's like, think of like your hobbies. Think of like, you know, I started getting into like period drama books.
Oh, I love this so much.
Oh yeah. Like Jane Austen-esque, but not Jane Austen.
I'm reading Remains of the Day right now. Have you read that one?
I haven't, but I'm familiar with the title. So I know more modern narrative is like, this falls under self-care. And so people are kind of like, oh, it's just self-indulgent. No, what you're talking about and what, you know, what we know is that in order to have to nourish our libido, we mm-hmm. have to meet these other needs, these actual needs that we have. Like, sure, we need sex in order for the species to survive, but we individuals don't need sex to survive. No yes. coroner ever put that on a death certificate. Yeah. Like, oh, and they never had sex. They're now dead. You know,
I think you're so right to point to how in American culture, a lot of that message does come via certain strains of evangelical Protestant,
Definitely the culture. fundamentalist.
Yeah. Like your husband yeah. needs this. And if you don't put out, then he's going to fall into sin. He's going to watch mm-hmm. porn and masturbate or go have affairs. And it's all on you to keep him from sinning by, you yep. know, just offering yourself basically a sex vending machine is my term. Right. I like to call this incorrect view of the women, you know,
only- I say sperm receptacle. That's better.
Yes. No. And then, but we do have, as you well know, pet peeve. And okay, so this might be like, we have to control ourselves, Emily, to not go off on too much of a tangent on this, but I know marital debt, right?
Oh Lord. That's a whole episode unto itself.
I know. But briefly, I think we know this is so misunderstood and it's not. And basically what I like to point out is, okay, right. So marital debt, people say this is the idea that you owe your husband sex or he mm-hmm. owes you that you're, you know, you owe it to each other anytime and, you know, upon request and never say no. Otherwise you're not mm-hmm. fulfilling the marital debt. It was never intended to be like that. And what I like to point out is that we have a lot of development in Catholic sexual ethics in the last 100+ years. Many documents have come out. You know, the church has really reflected seriously upon the meaning of sex as total gift of self, you know, the body language of the wedding vows, saying I do to each other with our whole body, saying I love you, I receive you, I give myself to you, I cherish you. And that marital debt phrase the church has not seen fit to put that phrase marital debt in any of the
praise problem. God.
Right? Not there in Humanae Vitae.
Praise God,
not there
literally.
In Consortio, in any of the other official documents we have. It's not in the catechism, the universal catechism that came out in the 90s. Right.
Because it goes back to Thomas Aquinas or maybe even before that.
Uses it, right. And it's from canon law basically in the Middle Ages. And what I found is that like this meant like, so even a woman whose husband was called to go off and like fight for a lord or, you know, do a crusade or whatnot. If the woman, his wife was like, well, no, I need him here to keep me faithful and, you know, to fulfill his marital debt. Like then he had a just reason. Like a canonical reason to stay home, to have sex with his wife, right? So it's actually empowering to women and it gets...
he can't go anywhere. No. He needs to warm my bed. That's what's going down. Oh, anyway, man.
So you're right. This would be an entire other episode to develop that more fully and unpack.
But I know there was a Pints with Aquinas episode that was done on that. And I was a little like.
They provided some nuance, but I don't land fully where they landed on that.
I was the same.
I think you were pointing to like, it's good to be generous. And I agree. It's good to be generous. Yes. But being generous and indebted are two very different concepts.
Very different things. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just that phrase marital debt, debt. Is like, it doesn't have any place. If this is a mutual self gift, that word debt doesn't belong. Like it doesn't make any sense in that context. So it's
just owe someone a present. Like when it's your birthday, and you go around your friend's family, like, all right, where's my present? You owe me.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's a debt, it cannot by definition be a gift. So
a gift to be freely given. There has to be a choice about whether someone is, you know,
this is actually the podcast episode I just recorded, released last week, is Can You Say No to Your Spouse? And I go through like all that, like, you have to retain the right to say no at any time for any reason. It doesn't mean that you do say no, but you have to have that freedom to choose. Yeah. Right? It's about that freedom to choose. And if you lose that freedom of choice, then love is absolutely impossible. That was basically the point that I made.
Amen. Totally agree. Okay, so now let me share this.
Yes.
You're going to love this. I had a question
I'm
for
ready.
my moral theology mentor, John Grabowski, because a thing has come up a lot in my working with women in my Delight course, women who are striving to grow in their enjoyment and of the marital embrace, or just various aspects. Maybe some women in the course they're the higher libido ones and their husband's lower libido.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe there's women who are happy to be a yes to sex, but they're just not, like, they haven't made it to orgasm, or maybe they orgasm, but they still just don't enjoy sex.
Anyway,
so there's just a lot of different, I would say you would be surprised, except you probably also, Emily, hear lots of different personal stories of what is happening.
I do. Yes.
It takes a lot to shock me. The only thing that shocks me at this point is the people who, like, they open up to and they're like, ew, gross, you're asking that question. That's what I'm just like, no. But the actual questions themselves or the issues, I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right.
My question to John Grabowski was, how much of the... Well, okay. So like you, I'm sure, I do a lot of, like, explaining to women about their clitoris and mm-hmm. that, like,
yes,
stimulating that is the way to enjoy sex more,
yes,
and, you know, having their husband, helping him learn the right touch and whatnot. So, but my question was, like, how much, is it okay for the woman to touch herself part of this?
Yeah.
As part of a marital act.
Yeah.
And so here's the reply John Grabowski sent me back. And he said, yes, I have thoughts on this. And he points to, and I asked him, like, are there sources? What writings do we have in our tradition that can speak to this? Well, we have one. Archbishop Patrick Kenrick wrote a manual around 1850, which was approved by the Holy Office, which was the precursor to today's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. And this book was used in seminaries across the U.S., and its title was Theologia Moralis. Basically, moral theology in Latin. In it, he taught that women had a right and a moral obligation to orgasm, and that if a husband failed to bring his wife to orgasm during intercourse, he was guilty of a venial sin of omission. He also counseled that women could bring themselves to orgasm by touching. So we understand this to be through sexual self-stimulation. And this could be after intercourse if their husbands failed to stay sexually active until the wife came to orgasm. And he thought that women were guilty of grave sin if they deliberately distracted themselves during sex so as not to reach orgasm. And so the reason for this teaching, and it seems to be that Kenrick followed Alphonsus Liguori in teaching that female orgasm was a necessary part for the health of the child who might be conceived. So we know now this is not
right. Accurate.
Biologically, but since we have currently such an emphasis in our church on the interpersonal meaning of sex, it seems like Kenrick's teachings can still really be relevant to,
you know, holy jeez.
Yeah, right?
Okay, listeners, you can't see my face, but the expressions that just happened as Sarah was reading, y'all, oh my god. I just want to repeat the year that was written.
1850.
Yeah. 1850.
Okay. Holy jeez.
Right. That if a husband doesn't bring his wife to orgasm, he's guilty of a venial sin. I just want to show this to every single priest who rejects Vatican II and says that if a wife refuses her husband, she's committing a sin against justice. No, sir. No, sir. Here's this from 1850. This predates Vatican II pretty well. Here you go. Oh
yeah,
my God.
I'm Catholic, and then go embrace this, you know, great part of our moral tradition.
Oh, I need to go find, is it a book? Is it, like, what is this?
I will tell you what I've got here. Yeah, it's a moral theology manual. So in the tradition of moral theology in the Catholic Church, a big part of our moral theology was developed to aid confessors, priests who are hearing confessions. And so these moral theology manuals were used in seminaries in the moral theology classes to train future priests for confession. And they would get pretty detailed and minute on addressing specific moral questions, including in sexual ethics. So, so the manuals, in moral theology, we just call them the manuals.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of faded away a bit, probably like the middle of last century.
Wow. This just in, folks, the Catholic Church hates women. So much. So much. Oh my God. Okay. I'm literally learning this like live right now. This is amazing. I'm just, yeah, I'm gonna have to like, oh my gosh.
If you pull a specific phrase from Thomas Aquinas on marital debt, why not go back to Archbishop Patrick Kenrin also and Kenrick and his manual here, and let's talk
See,
about
this
this
is,
more.
yeah, see, this is why, like, the more I study and the more I learn, like, and I hear people railing against NFP and like women need to make sure that they're having sex with their husbands and all this stuff. I'm like, you literally have to reject church teaching in order to come to these conclusions. You have to, because like what you're talking about, people are, what you're saying is that, and I've seen the same thing that over the last 100 years, like during Vatican II and afterwards, like our, like the church writings about sexuality are really like, that's they're now they're coming out. And I mean, like if you look at the timeline of that, like it happened at the same time as the sexual revolution. Like this was the perfect time for these things to happen. And I think that if we think about that, all of the truth hasn't come out at once. It's been revealed slowly over time.
Yeah,
And
development of
that's
doctrine.
yes. And so, and this is one of those things that this is coming out at the right time. It just happens to be like Vatican II and post-Vatican II, but apparently also not. So yeah, no, I'm just okay, send me that because I need to, like, I don't want to eat, chew up too much time, but my mind is officially blown and I'm loving it. I'm loving it. But I want to talk more about the My Delight program that you do, because this is just this incredible space for Catholic women to talk like nitty gritty about sex and sexuality. And like you're talking about, you're going to learn about the anatomy of the clitoris. Like even within the last, I think it was within the last 3 years that I actually learned that the clitoris actually has like these two wings that go on either side. I thought it was just like a little nub, like, but it's
Heaven,
this whole
and
organ.
behind, like this whole subterranean, like invisible
Yes.
part that,
Yes.
yes, I know,
Yeah.
pretty
Like
amazing.
just very practical things, like, and again, like thinking about it in terms of like theology of the body, that our bodies are telling us something theological. They're pointing to something theological and incorporating that. So I would love if you just talk a little bit more about, or share a little bit about why you started this program, kind of what was the inspiration, what was the drive, and I obviously want to respect the privacy of everybody in your program, but if you have any examples that you can share, I'd love to hear that too.
Yeah, it started with one newlywed young woman. So Nathan and I had d been doing marriage enrichment. My husband Nathan and I have an online marriage enrichment ministry, and we've been
Which is awesome. Everybody should check that out,
thanks.
y'all.
In our abundant course, we really help couples renew the joy of their relationship, their marital friendship, and connect and feel like they're on the same page. And we had a and we've had lots of beautiful stories come out of that. But I had one young woman email me, and she said, "I've been getting your emails about abundant. Our marriage is really loving and good, and I feel close to my husband, but there's one aspect that I'm having trouble with, and it was making love." They had been married a bit, a few months, maybe even actually a year, because actually, yeah, she had a little girl by this point. She's like, "I'm not even sure how we conceived her because it doesn't
Oh,
fit.
wow.
Like, we
Wow.
just don't quite fit together, and it's really difficult." And so, just something about young newlyweds, they're my favorite. They're my absolute favorite. I love young couples, and when Nathan and I did marriage prep and a marriage ritual, I really love that energy. So I worked with her and I said, "I think I can help. But tell me what's going on." I heard more of the details. And I thought, I think there's a lot of anxiety because she had been raised in this very rigid, traditional household, very religious, and had nothing but messages of shame and no associated with sexuality. So just getting aroused, any of that. Any sort of like that whole area of her body,
Yeah,
of your marriage.
just shut down. Yeah.
Yeah, not comfortable. So I said, okay, I think, first of all, we need a correct understanding of the goodness of sexuality in our Catholic viewpoint, and then work with anxiety and We had just been through the pandemic, and one of my children had just been through a lot of anxiety related to the pandemic. And so I got training through the help of helping her get better. I actually got exposed to a lot of the best practices currently in how we can heal anxiety. And I used this with this young woman, and just a couple different things, recommended pelvic floor therapy, found several different avenues of help and in working with her, and spirituality and prayer. And it worked beautifully, to the point that a few months later, I checked in and said, okay, how are things are going? She's like, I see why people like this now. We did three times last week and I really enjoyed it. I'm like,
yes.
So that encouraged me to think, well, if I could help her, maybe I can help others. And I just had this idea. My husband and I were at a date. We went out for Thai food. We got fortune cookies. And you know the fortune cookie game, right?
Oh, yeah. No.
Right? So, do you know it?
Maybe not. Tell me what it is.
Oh, well, you get your fortune from the fortune cookie, and you just add the words "in bed" at the end of it.
Oh, yes. Oh, very familiar. Yes.
Much more exciting and interesting.
Oh, yes.
Great success awaits you.
Oh, yes, please. I'll take that.
Yeah, or whatever it might be. Anyway, I was on social media at the time, and I took a picture of my fortune cookie, explained about the fortune cookie game. And then I said, I have this idea. I might offer a course for Catholic women and engaged women, married and engaged women, helping them with their sex life. Would you be interested? What would you want to be in that course? And I got this overwhelming tidal wave of response. So many people had questions. They're like, yes, please do this. We need this. Yeah. One young woman emailed me. She said, I'm engaged and I am terrified of sex. You don't need to be. Like, let me help you. So I created the course. It was so much fun. It was honestly the most fun thing I'd ever done online. I just really felt like I could be totally myself. And it's just all women space, like you said. And it's just gotten better and better since then. I've run two rounds now. We do this. So it's kind of in a live cohort. So we do 3 months of weekly coaching calls, group coaching calls. Women email me their questions, and then I respond to them in the group coaching call without revealing who asked it. So you can get a personal, specific, custom answer to your very personal question without having to share your identity. And then I have recorded lessons in there as well, just going through the basics. And it's just been a blast. I'm really grateful that God has called me to this, though I never would have foreseen, you know, becoming a Catholic sex lady.
Me either.
Right?
This is all like a happy accident and like a weird accident. Like, you know, I love that so much, that, you know, the thing that you had planned for yourself and like how your life was going to go. And it's like, all of a sudden you start doing this thing and then you realize you love it. And I love hearing, anytime I hear a woman saying that like she's doing this work, it just makes her come alive. I'm like, yes, we need more of that. We need so much more of that. Because that's how you help people. Like, that's where, you know, like you are in the place where God wants you to be, to do the most good. And it doesn't even matter if you help. Well, I mean, you know, you're doing a business and you love it. It's like, yeah, sure. It doesn't matter if you only help one person, but it'd be really nice if you helped like 200, like 300, 1,000, you know, like let's dream big as well. But that's awesome. I love hearing
it's
that.
Wide open. You know, we have a few Catholic male voices speaking about sexuality in abstract ways, right? We have Chris West, we have Gregory Popchak, and his book, Holy Sex, and Chris West talking about theology of the body, and not a whole lot of specific practical details on how to help women in their experience of living out this aspect of their vocation. So there's just such a need, and women really want to grow in this area, and they don't know who to ask. They don't want to Google these questions.
Right.
And it's not a fellowship after mass type question, right? You're like, you know, great Jell-O salad, Mabel. Say, have you achieved climax yet with your husband?
All right. So Susan and Karen, step aside. We are now using Mabel. It's so true. And I've been thinking about this, and I've been talking with some of our other mutual friends, Mary and Bridget, about how our conversations about sex within the Catholic Church are male dominated. And it's not that what they're saying is bad, it's just incomplete. And
Yes.
we need some female voices in here to talk about the female experience, not to say the male experience doesn't matter or like you guys need to sit down and shut up. It's like, no, like,
thank
we're
you for
complimentary.
Right?
Yes.
Like, I'm grateful for them making this, clearing the area so that, yeah, okay, now we have space to come in
yes.
And build on that and
yes.
and add in our experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it really is interesting. I know somebody who, emailed one of these, men, I'm not going to say who, and she was experiencing pain with intercourse. Mm-hmm. And he basically told her that like this, the words that he used was, this was the marriage bed of the cross. And like, this is a beautiful offering for her to make. It's like,
oh.
No, she has vaginismus and she needs pelvic floor therapy, but he did not understand that. Right.
And out so of not knowing probably like,
right.
Probably.
Exactly. Exactly. And so she continued to endure vaginismus, not knowing that's what was going on. I think for a few more years after that was said to her, you know, because she wanted to enjoy sex. She didn't want to be in pain. And he was like, well, this is
offer
like,
that.
Basically, and it was delivered in a very kind and like caring way. It wasn't just like cut to the chase, offer it up. But like, that was, I think, kind of like the major takeaway. And it's like, yikes, no, like, you want to talk about a libido killer? Like, there's one, you know, like that'll do it. So yeah, we need like these female voices where we can like talk about the clitoris, talk about pelvic floor therapy, like, yeah, mama, I understand that whenever you have 3, 4, or 5 kids and you're exhausted at the end of the day, you're not asking too much to go to your husband and be like, honey, can you put them to bed? Can you give them a bath? If we are going to have fun tonight, I need 30 minutes by myself to decompress and to rest. Have fun. Let them peel your brain for a few minutes. Okay. You know, like that's perfectly reasonable. That's hard to be like, honey, I really want to connect and like make love to you in the morning after I've had a full night's sleep.
Mm-hmm. Or you after know? I feel emotionally connected to you when we've
yes.
had conversations and, you know,
yes.
we're connecting heart to heart and like mm-hmm. you care about me and I care about you. And, you know, that's
yes.
a really important ingredient as well to wonderful
yes.
lovemaking that gets lost a lot. And then
yeah.
I think another important part about why it's so important to bring out the female voice and female aspect to this is because a lot of women don't realize that they are perfectly normal for having a longer, slower arousal curve there.
Yes.
And I just, this kind of came full circle with me because I got another email a few weeks ago from a sweet young newlywed, and actually it's her mom who found me. She said, my daughter is newly married and she and her husband love the Lord and want to do what's right. They're having trouble with consummation. And my friend told me that you might be able to help with this. And
that's a really awkward email to get from her mother.
Well, I'm just so proud of her.
God
for
bless her. I mean, yeah,
mom.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. But she had asked her mom for help. And her mom
yeah.
said, I'm not experiencing anything. You know, I've never experienced anything you're describing. I don't know what I can offer.
Yeah.
So her mom reached out. And I was so proud of that young woman
yeah.
for seeking help. And
yes.
talking to someone instead
yes.
of just forcing things, enduring pain, having that wired into her brain, having that association,
mm-hmm.
you know, in her neural wiring that, okay, sex is painful.
Mm-hmm.
No, she didn't go forward with it. Once it started to be painful, she was like, okay, stop. We have to stop.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then working with her, I did a coaching call with her and just shared some basic facts with her about like, well, we know we need a good 20, 30 minutes arousal as women usually for all the changes, the physiological
mm-hmm.
changes that facilitate and enable lovemaking, enable
yeah.
us to take
yes.
And she's like,
yeah, like the
oh.
vaginal canal literally widens and lengthens with arousal. Like it is a physiological necessity.
Minnesota.
Did you ever watch that movie, The Holiday?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I've told you about this, but the scene in there where they're like about to have a one night stand, Cameron Diaz and Jude Law's character, and he asks her, how do you feel about foreplay? And she goes, I think it's overrated. And I was like, you're
a man
hates
wrote
you.
That script.
Yes, he did.
You.
Oh, yes, he did.
I was not
no.
a woman script writer in the
no.
editing, writing room.
Absolutely not. No, that's just some like weird male fantasy, but like, No, it's like when I watched that after I got married, I was like, oh my gosh, her vagina hates her. Like, this is not an option. Like, ow, no. Yes. And arousal curves for some women can even take longer. I
An
know
hour
that
and a half is could be normal.
absolutely, absolutely. That has happened to me even like 7 years into marriage.
Oh,
Like,
for sure, for sure.
after having kids and like, you hit like a hard reset on all of that stuff, and it's like now we're back to like taking an hour and a half. And like, yes, it's frustrating. And
It's
I
all, I
think
think it's
it,
frustrating if we have the expectation that it shouldn't, but if we have the
yes.
time and the mindset and the expectation, like we get to take a whole hour and a half connecting,
Yep.
then, right?
Yes.
I'm
And
sorry.
it's no, it's fine. It's just there's this comparison between like male and female
With
because
male seeming like better or the norm, right?
exactly, because it's quote unquote easier. But like if we frame it the way that you're saying that it is about connection, it's like actually taking longer to connect is about nourishing the entire marriage, which is easier in the long term. If we take that time now, like we're saving ourselves time later. You could even think about it that way. But yes, there's so much. I know I connected with a young woman that you forwarded to me, and she was asking about vibrators, and like I was trying to explain to her like the length of time with the arousal curve, and I was like, don't get a vibrator just so that you can have an orgasm as quickly and as efficiently as possible. That's not what that's about. It's not about like, well, like I, this is taking too long. I'm sorry. So here, just buzz me. Like that's not what we're doing. Like this is
I
about
think
learning the person. Yeah.
when we think about what the point of lovemaking of sex is, it's that interpersonal gift of self. It's knowing and
Yes.
loving each other. Because I think we understand why God made us so different. A lot of women in my course are like, oh, why is it, why is it so easy for men? Why is it so tricky to figure out what will turn me on from one night to the next? It's different each time and whatnot. Well, what does it say in the Bible, even just as early as Genesis, that the man knew his wife, Adam knew his wife, or, that it's knowing. It's in that whole process of learning and knowing each
Yes.
other that you build the connection. If man and woman both took 5 minutes to make love, right? Like we would not
Right.
through this whole process of communication, of sharing,
Right.
of learning about how our mutual sexuality works.
I
And
just can't imagine that being a satisfying sexual experience, Like even for a man, like 5 minutes, like you just show up and just done. Like
That's
I
not a
don't know.
question.
Like how is this, I mean, like, okay, like we've all done quickies from time to time, but like as the standard operating procedure, like no. It doesn't make any sense because you're right.
Right,
It's
how is that
about that
intimacy?
knowing. Yes, it's about that deeper,
Which
that
is on
deep, that
every
intimacy.
level of the human person, right? It's our physical, but also emotional and spiritual intimacy and communicative intimacy as well, and intellectual too. Like some of the women like me are kind of intellectual who come into the course and more academic. They're like, oh, this is just so physical with the bodies and the fluids and the sweating and like his leg hairs itch me and whatnot. I'm like, yeah, I get that. And you need
Should have
to
married a swimmer.
be
They shave their legs.
Do they?
Yes, they do.
Oh, that'd be something to try. Like, why not? Like, there's so many things we can try. And that's what I share in the class too. Like, lots and lots of practical ideas for how you can
Yeah.
play, how you can facilitate intimacy on all those levels, engage your mind as well. That's like our sexiest organ is our mind. But also like connect it all, right? Because we can't totally live just in our mind. And there were a few wives in my course a while ago who were, I got the sense they felt like they were superior to their husbands because he just wanted sex, but they really liked spiritual and deep and intellectual things.
Oh yeah.
I was like,
Yep.
you know what? We are incarnate, like we are body and soul. Like the incarnation shows the
Yep.
importance of the body. The body matters, matter matters, and that's why
Yeah.
this is so significant, what we
God
do.
made it and it is good. What was that heresy? Was it Gnosticism that like
Oh, it just got,
basically elevated the
yes.
spiritual over the physical? And it's like, yep, oh, there it is. There
Gnosticism
it is.
and
It's still
Manichaeism,
there.
like they all kind of recycled that same basic idea.
Yes. Yeah. And that's where it shows up that like, oh,
Authentic.
this stuff doesn't matter because it's the stuff of matter. It's like, no, God made it. It is good. Like sex is good. one of the other things that I've been thinking about and like talking with Bridget and Mary is, you know, how, you know, men are more kind of stereotypically speaking, I'm speaking in very broad stereotypes here, but men are kind of more physically oriented, whereas women are more relationally, you know, emotional, spiritually oriented. And I think that there is like some wisdom in God's design there, because like, it's not all on one person, right? Like there is a sharing there because both are important. There's not a hierarchy here in terms of level of importance. No, like we are embodied spirits. And so the language that we speak with our body is just as important as the language that we speak with our mouths, with our minds, you know, and trying to work through like an ebb and flow in that within the marriage, saying like my husband's higher desire than mine for sex is good. It's to remind us that this sexual union is important, but also my stronger focus on the emotional, spiritual side is also a reminder that this is important too, and that we need to work on finding this balance and really this integration. I love that word so much more than balance, because it's like, yeah, there's still like a separation, but it's about integration. And that's actually what chastity is. Chastity is the integration, yeah, of our sexuality with our personhood. So,
I want to speak out for the 20% of us wives who are the higher libido wife.
Please do. Yes. I love because this. Yes. Go.
What you're describing is quite common, but there are a lot of wives, and they show up in my course, and I myself too am one where it's often the wife who finds herself initiating more, and the husband's, you know, pretty content doing other things and less likely to be thinking about making love, to make the wife feel uncherished and you know, desired. We want to feel desired. And what it's interesting to know, when you were talking about, you know, men maybe having more of a physical desire, I would say a lot of it has to do actually not so much male female, though that, you know, that there is a reason for that stereotype, but also the temperaments are huge. I think that melancholics and phlegmatics may tend to be more abstract and easygoing and less likely to initiate, I would say, or wanting the conditions to be just so, like for the melancholics, yes, things must be right, you know?
Yes, yes.
So I think something to really pay attention to in your dynamic with your husband is, you know, how do our temperaments affect our sexuality? And also just the basic knowledge of accelerators and brakes. For a lower libido husband, maybe he just has a lot of breaks. Do you know what I'm talking about? Gosh, what is her name? Emily Nagoski, right? And her book.
Breaks and accelerators.
Interesting. Like, she's like a pioneer sex researcher in the secular world on researching women's experience of sexuality. Like, even in the secular world, we are barely getting started.
Yeah.
Researching women's experience here. And and she's one of the ones at the forefront of that, but yeah, she talks about how there are these things that make us want to make love. Those are our accelerators, and those things that inhibit that, like you're in a public place or, you know, just lots of things. So I think it's important to really learn that about yourself, but also about your spouse, and especially your husband, that, you know, maybe it might seem like he's lower desire or like your lower desire, but maybe you just need to pay attention to a lot of your brakes are being, you know, pressed. And the more that you can release a lot of those, identify them, you know, like for a lot of wives, hearing your baby cry in the other room, right? That's going to be a break.
You know. Screeching halt.
And there can be some finesse with that. Like maybe a whimper, the baby might self-soothe and go back to sleep. But of course, we as moms are wired to just be on high alert and very vigilant. For anything and have that nurturing maternal instinct to want to go to baby. But we can also learn like, well, okay, they don't need us every single time they whimper, and baby can self-soothe back to sleep. And I can retrain my brain to focus back on what's going on here with my husband. And, you know, so there's some of that as well.
Yeah, no. And I love so much that you bring the experience of, the wife having the higher libido, because I know I've talked to women who, like, they do have the higher libido, and because we do have this broader stereotypical narrative of men are insatiable sex fiends and women just put up with it, that I know that in their marriage they feel so lost. Like you said, they feel uncherished, they feel like something is wrong with them, something is wrong with their husband, what do I do, how do I, like, they think that they, like, it's wrong for them to want to initiate. Or
and
that
we can go for advice too, because most requests and advice are not geared towards that situation. And then you
exactly.
just feel like really lonely and like you're weird.
Yes. And it's like,
but you're
no.
not weird. I'm here to tell you, ladies, you're not weird. You're in good company.
I think what's normal is for one spouse to have a higher libido than the other spouse. And whether that is the man or the woman doesn't matter. It's like what the rules are for the spouse with the higher libido and the spouse with the lower libido are the same, whether it's the wife with the higher libido or not. You know, it's like how you're working through, like, figuring out brakes and accelerators, all these types of things. It's just, yes, the narrative is more geared towards man wants sex, woman puts up with it type of situation. But the same rules apply if, you know, the woman is having the higher libido. And yes, you're not weird, you're not abnormal, you're not broken, you're just, it's just different.
Yeah. And so many, when I've worked with wives in the course, a lot of times as I ask more, I find out that maybe a lower libido husband grew up in an environment where he was mm-hmm. criticized a lot, where he could mm-hmm. not take initiative because he was just heard nothing but criticism. Actually, mm-hmm. many of the cases where I've worked with wives like that, that's been the case, is their husband just does not have a sense of security about himself. Mm-hmm. And that's not my husband's case. He grew up in like the happiest, best household, but he's just a low key, chill guy yeah. and, you know, sensitive breaks. And then we learned that what is common in all these situations is it's always a difficult thing to manage with communication yes. and expectations yes. and assumptions and so much potential for just hurt feelings.
Yes.
And so that's why I'm so grateful that God prepared me before heading into working in this area of sexuality with the relationship skills background from marriage management. So I can help. Like, we have a whole section in My Delight on good communication skills just in general, and then specifically communication skills regarding your sex life, initiating, declining, graciously, with consideration.
Yeah.
How to talk about your love life with your husband or wife. Well, with your husband, because it's only wives in the course. How to give affirmation and gratitude. Mm-hmm. Those are really key and kind of get lost. Gosh, Emily, I had a wife in one of my courses, one of my My Delight courses, and their love life was awful. And also their entire merit, they're a big Catholic family, lots of homeschooled kids. Their older kids were often, you know, starting to have marriages of their own. But this husband and wife did not have it together as far as like a basic working marriage relationship in which they communicated oh, wow. with each other. It was heartbreaking. She talked about how she would slip to go to bed late at night, angry. They wouldn't talk with each other, and then would slip away first thing in the morning to go off and pray her prayers so that she wouldn't have to talk with her husband or deal with him. He would never connect and communicate. And he had so much lingering resentment about things. And I checked, and he wasn't abusive or, you know, he wasn't emotionally a tyrant or anything. They just had matured to that degree to be able to communicate with each other and respect, just lay that foundation of a working, respectful, basic relationship. So that's really important too. It's like basic marriage skills.
Yes. And I love that you're able to bring that into this space as well. Like it's not so many times when I hear people talk about sexual issues, like when you get to the root of it, it's not a sexual issue.
Oh yeah.
It's something else.
Not the root of things.
Yeah. Yes. Never.
Like some certain skills for like how to touch where or whatnot. But a lot of times it's like, yeah, let's work on how you can share your feelings with each other and be heard and feel loved and seen. And
yes. Yeah.
Emotional. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love this. Well, listeners, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. And again, you heard at the beginning where you can find a little bit more about Sarah, a little bit more about this program. And if you are interested in signing up, you can find that in the show notes. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me. I'm super excited. And please email me that thing you just read live.
Oh, for sure.
1850. I want that so bad.
Yeah, you bet. Archbishop Patrick Kenrick's manual from 1850 is, I'm going to send that your way. Emily, it's always so great talking to you. Thank you so much for all you do, and God bless you, and God bless all you listeners.
Yes. All right. Thanks. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I swear, I wish sometimes, just for this one episode, that I had recorded video so that you could have seen my face when she was describing that document that was written in the 1850s that assisted confessors, that said that husbands refusing to help their wives achieve orgasm is a venial sin. I wish I could have recorded my face just for that one tidbit. I swear that is going to be my favorite factoid to drop for a long time to come. But I told you at the beginning that I would be back at the very end to share some more details about the program. So My Delight has two tiers. There is the basic tier and the premium tier. So I'll just kind of read off what you get in the basic tier, and then the premium tier has all the same things plus some extras. So basic enrollment is $747 for the full 3 months. And what you get with that is 90-day access, 30 plus recorded video lessons, a weekly group coaching call on Zoom, and she will invite experts on that call periodically. A workbook, a bonus surrender and service training, and a bonus what's allowed in the bedroom PDF cheat sheet. Now for premium enrollment, you get all of that. It is $1,097, but you get lifetime access instead of 90-day access. And in addition to all of that, you get 3 private 25-minute Zoom calls with Sarah outside of the weekly group coaching calls. And you also get a How to Pray with a Reluctant Spouse video and PDF guide. So if this is something that, you really feel like, hey, I need something to really help troubleshoot my marriage, I and my sex life, whatever is going on, whether it's ideological stuff, whether it's practical stuff, I haven't had an orgasm. I don't know how to talk to my husband about how to receive pleasure or give pleasure, all of those types of conversations that nobody prepared us for. I can't recommend this enough. It's so awesome. The fruit of what Dr. Sarah is doing is just incredibly beautiful. And I know that this cost is it's high. It's certainly high. And she actually does have on her website, when you click the link at the end of my show notes, even if you're just curious, the link, you can go, and she has all of these details up on that website, where you can find out more and take some time to process and think about it. Look at your finances and talk with your husband about this investment. She does have some comparisons there, with secular programs, private coaching, and then what, just kind of regular counseling or therapy might cost. This is not one of those things that it's a guaranteed help. It's really incumbent on you, if this is something that you want to do, it's really incumbent on you to bring your whole self with an open mind, if you want to really receive what she has to offer. I'm always cautious with these types of things. I don't want to say, if you do this program, your life will be great afterwards. Maybe not. Maybe this will actually set off some really deep work for you and your husband to do. And that's going to, not be very pleasant at first, but it will certainly be beneficial in the long run. So again, if you feel like you're in a place in your marriage where something like this, you need, but maybe you don't have therapists in your area, you don't know a Catholic sex therapist, this is such a great option to pursue. And if nothing else, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I hope you enjoyed those bombs and just listening to two women talking about sex and talking practically, but also respecting the sacredness of the act as well. And if you get nothing else out of our conversation, I hope that that's something that maybe you can take into your relationships and your friendships, the knowledge that you can have these conversations. It is possible, and it is good, and it is beautiful when Catholic women get together and talk about these things in a way that is edifying and truly oriented towards wanting to enrich one another's marriages. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it brightened your day and that you laughed as much as you learned. If you're enjoying the show and want more people to learn about what I share here, please leave a review and even share with a friend. I hope you'll join me again soon. Until then.